What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the PFN Scouting Podcast. Ian Cummings joined by my fellow NFL draft analyst, AJ Schulte. Last week, we talked about the 2024 free agency period and the ramifications for the 2024 NFL draft. And then, of course, free agency popped off right after we recorded that. So it kind of became outdated very quickly. But we are continuing our coverage with post-free agency content today. We each did a first round mock of our own using the PFN mock draft simulator, and we're going to go through the implications, quarterback, similar picks, favorite fits, all of those things in due time. But first off, AJ, back with you again, man. How you doing this week?
I'm doing great, man. It's been really productive. I've got the seven rounder this week, so been slowly working my way through that, but it's a lot of fun now that free agency is kind of really kicked off. Unless you're the Dallas Cowboys,
yeah,
then you've kind of like it. It's in some ways a lot easier to predict picks now, but it is also in some ways a lot harder because it's, well, they did take this guy, but maybe they still like this other guy. You know, so it's especially like with the Jets, right? They went so hard on the offensive line that we're sitting here saying, maybe that opens up the potential for Brock Bowers. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, how do they attack this? And so it's been a fun case study, but overall, I'm doing great, man.
Yeah, and props on the seven rounder. Those always take a lot of effort. So if you're listening, keep an eye out for that on Friday or Saturday. Man, writing the full seven rounder last week was,
I can't imagine.
It was awful. Yeah. I will just say it, man, because I finalized my initial picks, right? I have a spreadsheet where mm-hmm. I go through all the picks, and I finalized it on like Thursday morning, I think, and I was going to write it all up. And then I think later that day, the Bears trade for Keenan Allen. Sam Howell gets traded to the Seahawks, right? Like the Texans trade their 23rd overall pick to the Vikings, right? And that happened later, right. But it's like, so even through Friday and Saturday, I was making changes to it because I got to get up to date, man. I got to get up to date.
When I did it back in December or so, like when there was the draft declaration deadline, so mm-hmm. it might have been early January.
Yeah.
There were so many guys that kept coming back to school or hitting the transfer portal. Yep. I must have taken out 40 or 50 names by the end of it. And I was like, what are we doing here?
Yep.
Like it really felt like every time I hit, okay, save draft. I'm going to send it to the editors and get it ready for publish. And then somebody would come back and I'd be like, oh, dad, go like Benjamin Eurosek and the Georgia linebackers mm-hmm. and all these guys. I was like, guys, just give me a break. It was such an awful.
Definitely the top two worst times to write a full seven rounder. Definitely the declaration period and then free agency. I mean, that's just, God, it's just, it's awful. But hey, we got through it. And hey, we have a much clearer picture to go through today. And luckily, we're only doing first round mocks. I didn't put another seven rounder on your plate. So we're sticking with one round.
We would need more than 45 minutes.
We would need a lot more than 45. We might need more than that for this one, man. We talk a lot. I talk a lot, but it's we'll get through it. So the exercise today, we're going through a first round mock to kind of talk about the implications of the free agency period for those of you who are listening. And I'm going to try and go through each of our mock drafts real quick here. I'm not going to, discern the trades or whatever that happened. Just like kind of go through each one. So I'll start with AJ's here that you sent. If my phone will load the picture, it's not loading the picture. Okay, I'm going to look at it on my computer. We're going to adapt here. Number one overall, you got Caleb Williams. Number two overall, Jaden Daniels. Number three, Drake May to the Patriots. Four, Cardinals taking Marvin Harrison Jr. Five, Vikings trading up for J.J. McCarthy. Six, Malik Nabers to the Giants. Seven, Joe Alt to the Titans. Eight, Falcons getting Dallas Turner. Nine, Bears getting Rome Odunze. 10, Olu Fashanu to the Jets. 11, Brock Bowers to the Chargers. 12, the Steelers getting Amarius Mims, trading up for him. I like that. Terrion Arnold, 13 to the Raiders. 14, Troy Fatanu to the Saints. 15, Quinyon Mitchell to the Colts. Jared Verse to the Seahawks at 16. 17, Brian Thomas Jr. to the Jaguars. 18, Taliese Fuaga to the Bengals. 19, Laiatu Latu to the Rams. I imagine you liked making that pick. Bo Nix to the Broncos, who traded down and still got him at 20. Nice little maneuvering there. 21, Byron Murphy II to the Dolphins. 22, Chop Robinson to the Eagles. Nate Wiggins to the Chargers at 23. 24, Graham Barton, offensive lineman, to the Dallas Cowboys. 25, Tyler Guyton to the Packers. 26, Jackson Powers Johnson to the Buccaneers. 27, Cooper DeJean, defensive back, to the Cardinals. 28, A.D. Mitchell, wide receiver, to the Bills. 29, Kool-Aid McKinstry to the Lions. 30, J.C. Latham to the Ravens. 31, Jordan Morgan to the 49ers. And 32, Johnny Newton to the Chiefs. They pull it off again. Oh, my gosh. Getting the value deal. I like that for sure. And then I'll try and go back to my mock here. So I had Williams going number one overall to the Bears. I had the Commanders staying put at two and getting Drake May. I had the Vikings getting J.J. McCarthy as well, but I had them trading up to three to get him instead. I had the Patriots getting Jane Daniels at six. Marvin Harrison Jr. To the Cardinals at four, pretty standard. Roma Dunze at five to the Chargers. Joe Alt to the Titans at seven. Dallas Turner to the Falcons. Malik Nabers to the Bears. Brock Bowers to the Jets at 10 is what I had. So we just mentioned that earlier. Brian Thomas Jr. to the Giants, who ended up trading back down with the Patriots, who originally traded with the Vikings. So a little bit maneuvering there. Troy Fitanu to the Saints as well. Taliese Fuaga to the Raiders. For me, I also had Bo Nix going to the Broncos, but a little bit earlier. Quinyon Mitchell to the Colts. I had Terrion Arnold going to the Seahawks, actually. I was very intrigued by that fit with Mike McDonald. Got Olu Fashanu to the Jaguars on mine. I was surprised he fell that far. Amarius Mims to the Bengals. Jared Verse to the Rams. Jackson Powers Johnson to the Steelers. Johnny Newton to the Dolphins. Byron Murphy II to the Eagles. J.C. Latham to the Giants, who had the second first-round pick in the Vikings' original trade. Chop Robinson to the Cowboys. I was maybe thinking I should have gone tackle there in hindsight, but man, adding him to Mike Zimmer's defense, they lost a couple edge guys too. So I was thinking, you know, maybe I could swing and get Roger Rosengarten in round two or something. Cooper DeJean to the Packers. Laiatu Latu to the Buccaneers. Nate Wiggins to the Cardinals. A.D. Mitchell to the Bills. Same pick as you. Xavier Worthy to the Lions. I like that one a lot. Tyler Guyton to the Ravens. Jordan Morgan to the 49ers. And Ladd McConkey to the Chiefs. So AJ, any initial thoughts going through this exercise? Each of us did a first round mock. For me, a lot of the variance stemmed from the initial QB movement at the top of the board.
Yeah, definitely. I'm kind of interested by the maneuvering there of the board with the quarterbacks mm-hmm. picks. So you trade down of three. If I'm remembering the math right, you trade down from three mm-hmm. with the Patriots, and then you swing back up to six. Okay, gotcha.
So, yeah, I feel like it's tough because we've heard conflicting things on Drake May, right? But we've kind of, at least after free agency, we can really zero in on the teams that are targeting a QB. Bears are definitely going to take one, number one overall, probably going to be Caleb, but we don't know for sure. Commanders definitely going to take one at two. But we don't know if it's going to be Jaden Daniels or Drake May. And then the Patriots are definitely going to take one in round one. Of course, the big kicker is, can the Vikings entice them with an offer strong enough to move them off three if, say, Drake May is there and they want to get their guy? Or in my mock, if they really like J.J. McCarthy, he's very young, he's very talented. I could see him being a guy that teams are aggressive to get just because he is so young and there is so much potential there. But the Patriots, for me, that offer was compelling enough to get him off that spot. And then they ended up adding an extra first rounder in 2025, right? So they get that first rounder. They went back to 11 and 23 and then packaged those deals again to get up to number six for Jaden Daniels. So that kind of maneuvering, you know, could come into play. Again, it all depends on the differing valuations of each QB in this class, which again, every team is going to feel different about each guy. And that's kind of adding more variance because you've got at least four guys who are definitely going to go in the top seven.
Yeah. I feel like it's getting closer and closer to four in the top five, to tell you the truth, mm-hmm. Which I could be wrong, but I don't know if that's happened in the last decade easily. I don't think it's happened since I've been covering the draft. I can't recall any other quarterback class with that. But so like it's definitely interesting because if you're the Patriots, you do you risk a team enticing the Chargers there mm-hmm. as well?
Yeah.
How it all stacks out, you know, what if the Giants get aggressive as well, right? And so if you're the Patriots, you move from three to six, which is a lot more tolerable, especially if you want to add a guy like Joe Alt, right? You can kind of nab him ahead of the Titans right there at seven, who we both had taking Alt. So there's a lot of intriguing movement. It's almost kind of like a Game of Thrones-esque of like, all these wheels are spinning and we're trying to figure out who goes where, mm-hmm. but it's a very, very interesting class, I think, at the top, and just how each team stacks each guy is going to be fascinating to see.
Yeah, for sure. And I think with the Chargers, like that trade down proposition, because before free agency, every single mock, it felt like had them trading down from five, whether to 11 to 12 to 13, every single mock had that happening. And now it's a little bit trickier now that they've traded away Keenan Allen and now that they've released Mike Williams, because it's a little bit tougher to trade down and maybe lose out on one of the big three, right? You know, Marvin Harrison Jr. probably going to go number four to the Cardinals. That's what we've both got, I think. And I think for me, it would be tough to pass that up. I think with the Cardinals, some teams are more incentivized to trade down, but the Cardinals already have a ton of capital in this class, right? So if you can just get Marvin Harrison Jr. and just keep that capital, like, that might be the way to go right now. Obviously, if an offer is enticing enough, if you don't have to move down too far, I would take it. But at the same time, they're in a good spot where if you really love the player, there's no reason not to add him to your offense, right? But the Chargers, it's a little bit different because you want to trade down to get more capital because you have a lot of needs across that roster, right? You have a lot of needs. But at the same time, if you trade down to, say, you know, 11 with the Vikings, 12 to the Broncos, 13 to the Raiders, there's a decent chance that Malik Nabers and Roman Dunze aren't going to be there. And then what are you doing, right? Like, there's still options for you, but getting that top flight wide receiver seems pretty important for a team that's going through this transition. Justin Herbert with Quentin Johnson, the way that he kind of struggled to acclimate last year, that was a tough call for me because I look at the Chargers and looking at the roster, looking at what they need and looking at the other QB needy teams on the board, I can definitely see all the arguments for trading down. It's just as simple as, do you really, really want Roman Dunze or Malik Nabers? If you do, it might be a little bit easier said than done.
Right. I think the intriguing part of this is also like how each team stacked the wide receivers.
Yeah.
Right. You know, because we've seen some teams where it's just like, yeah, Marvin Harrison Jr. is a no-brainer. Like, no doubt about it. He's a clear-cut wide receiver one. But then, you know, now we're hearing more and more, well, some teams have Malik Nabers, right? And we even heard, especially around the combine, hey, don't be surprised if Roma Dunze is a team's wide receiver one, right? And I think each three of those guys are worthy of that honor. Like, it kind of just depends on what you need, right? But each of those guys had a tremendous year. Their tape is such an easy projection. Like, if you need a wide receiver, I think all three of those guys fit the bill. It's just like a pick your flavor. It's definitely intriguing, especially if you're the Chargers, where it's like, you know that they want to run the ball. And they want to run the ball a lot, mm-hmm. and a whole lot. But you kind of have to maximize your window with Justin Herbert here as well. So it's definitely a tough thought process. I don't know if you have a wrong answer there, right? Of, we trade back, we get more picks, fill out a roster, or, hey, you know what? This guy is also really damn good. Right. So we're just going to take him and pair him with our stud quarterback as well. And just be happy with that for another 10 years.
Yeah, and it's not like you can't get a really good receiver on day two of this draft. This draft is really stacked at the wide receiver position. It's just as simple as this group of Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, and Malik Nabers is pretty much like everyone's in agreement. That's the big three. And those are the guys who are head and shoulders above the rest. As good as the entire class is, these are the guys that you can build your offense around. Premier threats from day one, right? So for the Chargers, who have such a need at that position, it's tough to pass up. But yeah, I mean, obviously you could go back to 11 with the Vikings, get maybe a tackle or a corner or something, and then, you know, flash back to 37 overall, get a guy like Xavier Leggett or something like that, or Keon Coleman, if he's still there, right? Like, there will be options for you. It's just a matter of, you know, you're not going to get a guy like Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers in the second round. Those guys are different prospects for sure, you know, even with MHJ in the class. So it's going to be interesting for sure. Talk to me about the top quarterbacks and what is going to happen there, because we still have no idea. The Commanders could go with Jaden Daniels. I'm of the mind, and I think you are too, that there's been a little bit of, you know, overthinking the Drake May evaluation. He's still right at the top of my board. I would consider taking him number one overall. Honestly, him and Caleb Williams are that close for me. But, you know, we're seeing more reports that, you know, and a lot of it could be smoke screens. We're in, you know, misinformation season for sure. So, you know, you want to be weary of that. But, you know, looking at the Commanders and the spread-oriented offense that Cliff Kingsbury is going to be bringing over as well, like, I could see a fit for Jaden Daniels there too, you know, spreading the field for his running ability, but also maximizing his deep passing. You know, there is something there. There is something to it. As a QB prospect, he's not in the same tier as Drake May for me. But what do we think happens there? Because honestly, the more I think about it and the more I reevaluate my own, observations, I can't get behind an argument taking Daniels over May. But there is the team fit aspect there. There is the dynamic athleticism and running ability. You know, what's your feel? Because you had Jaden Daniels going number two to the Commanders.
Yeah, it was kind of just more of a I've had 1-3 Daniels or Caleb Daniels May or Caleb May Daniels, excuse me, like the whole way. And I kind of wanted to a little bit just kind of splash it up.
Yeah.
But it's a tricky fit schematically because it does. The reporting of this quarterback class is very odd because, you know, like it's some teams like really like Jaden Daniels. I think he's an awesome thrower of the football. I think he's got this great talent, athleticism, ability and all this. But then they were turned off because he left the combine early. And then it's tough to really parse through. It does feel like a very Commander's decision to take Jaden Daniels. And it's not like Jaden Daniels is a bad quarterback either. Like this isn't a process of you have to tear down one guy to hype up another or anything like that. I feel like if you're looking at the kind of quarterbacks that Jaden Daniels has, or like that Cliff Kingsbury has kind of worked with a little bit more, I think in terms of just like success, I think Jaden Daniels is the closest to Kyler Murray than Drake May. But you know what? He's also worked with a lot of other air raid quarterbacks as well. So I don't know if either decision is really a wrong one. I just kind of went with Jaden Daniels because that's the way that the wind has been blowing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really like the fit of Drake May with the Patriots as well.
Oh, yeah.
It just feels like it's such a seamless fit to me that it's just like, yeah, you know what? I feel like the Commanders could operate a spread-oriented offense, you know, with the wide receivers that they have, with Jaden Daniels. You kind of work a little bit of dual threat with him and Brian Robinson as well, right? The kind of a 1-2 run game combination, Austin Eckler feeding as well, part of that committee.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a lot of schematic intrigue with both of them, but I kind of just went with Daniels over him just for a few reasons, but mainly just to kind of do something different than I had.
Yeah, for sure. And like we've heard different things. Like we've heard that if Daniels isn't there at number three, like the Patriots could trade down. Right now, obviously misinformation season, right? Take everything with two grains of salt, because in my opinion, like Drake May is a phenomenal fit for the Alex Van Pelt scheme. I mean, you think back to what Joe Flacco was doing with the Browns late last season. That's the kind of effect that Drake May can have. I mean, you're talking about a big armed, you know, pocket passer who's got creation ability too, right? Like he's not a statue. Like he's very mobile for his size, but he doesn't rely on that to a fault. Like he can operate within the structure of the offense. He can navigate the pocket, and that drive velocity, that ability to place the ball on those seam routes, those dagger concepts. I mean, you know, and the ability to read DB leverage and throw to it, right? And throw guys open is very appealing to me. So I think you think back to what Flacco did late last year, you know, Drake May can have that same effect for you if you're New England. So picking Jaden Daniels number two is just as much a means to get Drake May to New England as well. This time of the year, if you're a mock drafter, right? Like, you know, analyzing all the possibilities, but it would be a lot of fun. It's going to be very interesting to see what ultimately happens though, because there is no denying within the public perception, right? You know, talking to guys, hearing from guys, Jaden Daniels does appear to have closed the gap a little bit on those top two guys, right? You know, within that perception. So it'll be interesting for sure. But I think both of us too had Drake May being out of reach for the Vikings. I picked him at two, and then you picked him at three. And I think one of the bigger proponents of the Vikings getting Drake May is if they can entice the Patriots with a big enough offer to get them off number three. That didn't happen in either of these mocks. So in that scenario, the guy they zero in on is JJ McCarthy, right? So JJ McCarthy, that fit with the Vikings, I like the fit a lot for sure. And I think the supporting talent is there for him to reach his ceiling potentially. I think you have the offensive line in place. You have a lot of great weapons. Get another slot receiver after losing KJ Osborne. But I think that you have an opportunity to potentially upgrade there in the draft this year. So, you know, I think all the pieces are in place. JJ McCarthy to the Vikings, a pick we both had, a pick that we both feel, I imagine, tepidly optimistic about. What were your thoughts with that one?
Yeah, it's I think when you look at the ability to coach and develop, I think Kevin O'Connell has, I mean, you saw what he got out of Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Kirk Cousins had his best 2 years under Kevin O'Connell. I really like the fit, and you don't have to rush out JJ McCarthy because you do have Sam Darnold on a 1 year deal. So you can kind of let JJ McCarthy kind of just like sit and develop if you want to. You have the supporting cast around him. I mean, you step into a wide receiver room with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, like that. Find me a better scenario for a rookie quarterback. And you have two proven tackles as well with Christian Darrisaw and Brian O'Neill. It's a tremendous fit, I think, for J.J. McCarthy, both in terms of what J.J. McCarthy needs in that kind of like stable environment, mm-hmm. the right kind of weapons, an offensive line that can give him time as he adjusts to NFL speed, but also, and he can also sit behind Sam Darnold for a year, but it's also what the Vikings need to kind of move past Kirk Cousins, move forward into this next step. Mm-hmm. Now Kevin O'Connell has his guy and now Kwesi, the new general manager, has his guy. They have a guy that they can build around that they know will be in the building for the next, hopefully a decade. And so that is, now they have that clear picture ahead instead of, well, if we don't have him, we have Sam Darnold for a year and then we're going to figure out what else happens. So it feels like the Vikings almost have to, just to have that kind of clarity. Mm-hmm. They just almost have to trade up. They almost have, which is, if you're a team that's looking to trade down, you're sitting there going, well, your price just went up, man. Because if you don't, like, I'm sitting here with all the cards, mm-hmm. Which is why I think they made that trade with the Houston Texans to get an extra first rounder, because I do think that's going to be what the cost is.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's no poker face. Like there's having a poker. There's no poker face there. You got 11 and 23. It's basically like loading the clip. Like, yeah, we're looking to move up, right? The question is how far. The question is who's going to be willing to make that move, right? The question is who's going to be at bat, right? You know. So I think for them, it's just, I think the first landmark, because again, I don't see the Bears are not moving from one. The Commanders are probably not moving from two. Landmark, the first potential landmark, mind us, is the Patriots at number three. But even then, I don't really see them moving down.
It's tough because it's, like we've heard the quarterback market next year just isn't as good, mm-hmm. right? But that's been something that's come out for years. And so it's like, do the Patriots, like, do you really want a first rounder next year? Right, because you have to be bad to even qualify for one of the top quarterbacks, which it doesn't feel like the Patriots think they will.
Yeah,
they're bringing back all their talent and they're not spending, like, which is not typically indicative of a team that is like trying to rebuild and just like throw money around. So it's tough for me to be like, oh yeah, they'll just take three first rounders and like in a vacuum, yeah, three first round picks, that's a lot. But when you look at the context of this year and next year, you're like, is it worth passing up on a quarterback on? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's, again, we're not in the buildings to know these discussions, but I think it's one worth having of what is the value of a first rounder next year if the quarterback class just isn't the same.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you do have a guy like Drake May there, you're hoping that a guy like Carson Beck or Shadur Sanders or Quinn Ewers is even at that level come mm-hmm. the draft next year.
Yeah. And it's a difficult discussion because there is a level of premonition that we can have, right? Like coming into this cycle, Caleb Williams and Drake May, it was pretty much agreed upon that those guys would probably be the top two picks. And now here we are 8 months later. And it's like, yeah, we were kind of correct there. Like nothing really changed. But then you go back a couple cycles earlier, right? In the summer of, before the 2022 NFL draft, like half the mocks had Spencer Rattler and Sam Howell going 1-2, right? And then a year later, Howell was a fifth round pick. Rattler's returning, going to South Carolina. And now he's probably going to be a late day two, early day three guy in this class, right? So there is a level of anticipation, premonition, like, with Williams and May, sometimes you can see that talent. And I think next year there are guys with talent. You look at Carson Beck, Shadur Sanders, Cameron Ward going to Miami is going to be an interesting one. But there's no level of QBing talent like Caleb Williams or Drake May, where we could say pretty confidently in the summer, like, yeah, these guys have the tools, the operational flashes are definitely there. It's a lot more uncertainty. And I think that's what you're hedging for, right? So where that value comes into play, that's what makes it so confounding for you. So, I think for the Vikings, you got to invest in it this year, right? And if you're the Patriots too, like you want to be in the driver's seat too, because you need a quarterback as well. You've got a really good bridge with Jacoby Brissett as well. So that's going to be just so many factors. We could talk about it for the entire day. The fact of the matter for the Vikings though is this, like you mentioned, they're moving off Kirk Cousins. This is the first time that Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell are able to pick their QB, right? Like Kirk Cousins was a great quarterback for them, but this is your guy who you are drafting and building from the ground up. And looking at the guys in the first round, you've got, you know, if you're going to be out of play for the first two or three guys, you're looking at, you know, JJ, probably definitely the first two guys, Drake May and Caleb Williams. But, you know, you look at JJ McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, like if you were stuck with those latter two, right? You know, ideally you're not. But JJ McCarthy is the only one who's 21 years old, who is right on the ground floor. You know, I think that's going to be very appealing to them. And then the offensive fit on top of that too. But we've talked about QBs for over half of this podcast, so let's move on. We had a few really intriguing fits. I think we both had Dallas Turner going to the Falcons. We both had Quinyon Mitchell going to the Colts. I liked that one a lot. Both had Jordan Morgan going to the 49ers, A.D. Mitchell going to the Bills. Talk to me about your favorite fits in your personal mock draft. I know Dallas Turner is definitely a fun one for Atlanta. He's kind of exactly what they need, that completing piece on the defensive side, being 6'3", almost 250, 34 and a half inch arms, ran a 4.46 40-yard dash, just a freakish physical combination of tools and just, you know, unmatched upside. And then Quinyon Mitchell in Gus Bradley's cover three scheme. I really like the off-man, the side saddle, the click and close ability that he has. I think that's a phenomenal fit for him in the recovery speed, the playmaking ability. If he's there at 15, for sure run that card, and especially with how free agency has gone for them. There was the L'Jarius Sneed trade rumors, and then those kind of fell through. So they still need a premier talent there, and they've got that too. But favorite picks from your personal mock, fire away.
Yeah, I feel like the first one, and one we had kind of together, was Troy Fautanu to the Saints. You had them trading up with swapping with Denver, and I just had them taking him outright at 14. Mm-hmm. You look at the Saints, and they're kind of transitioning into more of a Shanahan offense, right? With hiring Clint Kubiak, they're going to be a little bit more outside zone. And you look at the offensive line, especially that left side, Trevor Penning, we haven't really seen do much, right? He's not really do anything positive. I should clarify too much positively. He hasn't really won the left tackle job outright, and their left guard spot, Andres Pete is a free agent, and they haven't, we don't really know what their plans are to fix that. Troy Fautanu can play either spot. He could play your left tackle in that offense. I think, you know, there's been some kind of, is he a guard? Is he a tackle? I think he's proven he can play as an NFL tackle. I think he'd be great at guard as well, but I think he's earned the right to at least start and play at tackle. And I think he has the upside, especially in that kind of an offense, to be a quality caliber starting left tackle, and kind of give them that piece that Trevor Penning hasn't really developed into. Right. And you know, I think it's fair to give everybody a fair shot in a new offense and things like that. So it's not an outright indication that Trevor Penning is just an outright bust, but I feel like you need to have that closure. You know, you restructured Derek Carr. You absolutely positively have to keep him protected. If the offense isn't working because your left tackle is a massive hole, then you have to get that situated ASAP. And I feel like Troy Fautanu just is a seamless fit. We both had him there. I think it's a tremendous fit as well. But another tackle, I had the Steelers trading up for Amarius Mims. They love that kid. They have not hidden that they love Amarius Mims. That was the talk of the combine, was how much they love him. Is it a risk to trade up for him? Absolutely. But I feel like with you have that much affection for a guy, there are so many teams in between your pick and Denver that I don't know if you can really run the risk of him not falling to you, especially the Bengals are right there, and it would burn to see him on a division rival, right? If you love a guy that much. And the Broncos are actively trying to move down. They're not really hiding it. So I feel like it's a perfect swap as well. If a team wants to move down, we both had them taking Bo Nix as well, which is another a good fit for that offense with Sean Payton. I feel like it's a little rich for Bo Nix, but you kind of just have to take a quarterback because you most likely won't be there by your next pick, right? Yeah. Unless if Denver can swing a second rounder, right? Like if they just fall way back and take a second rounder, they could probably pick Bo Nix with their second rounder. But I don't know. You can't really run the risk of not taking him in the first round. mm-hmm. if you like him that much, because he won't be there by your next in the third.
Yeah, for like sure.
There's so many picks I could just sit here and talk about, but
Bo Nix and Denver is definitely one I want to spend a little more time on, because Denver was such a tough one for me to mock for the exact reason you mentioned, right? Like, you definitely know you need a QB, but the top four guys are gone, right? You're sitting there at 12 and you don't have a ton of day two capital either. You still have a few pretty big needs across the roster, right? So it's like, your best balance is definitely trading back. And if you can get Bo Nix at 20, I think your move is a perfect one, because you mentioned it. Like, you know, I think the only reason that they can move back, like, I was looking at my mock draft and I wanted to trade back, but the draft is so deep at positions like offensive tackle, like edge, right? You know, it's difficult at that point to find teams who are willing to trade up, right? Because it's so deep. Hey, maybe we'll just wait where we are and get a solid player. I think the avenue for them to trade down is if a team like the Steelers, for instance, are falling in love with a guy like a Amarius Mims, right? Like, we don't want the Bengals to have a chance to get this guy, because I think in my mock, I gave Mims to the Bengals, right? So, you know, that's the risk they run, right? If you don't make a move up for that guy, he could be suiting up for your division rival, right? And I think, too, the Steelers have proven that they are willing to trade off for guys they really like. They traded off for Devin Bush a few years ago, I believe, right? So
also, you know, with the Broncos.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, there's some pre-existing experience there, some familiarity. That could be a move that they make for sure. And I think for the Broncos, that's the best value you can get, is trading back, still getting a QB, and getting day two capital to strengthen the roster.
I have one more that I really fell in love with the way that it fell. Mm-hmm. Johnny Newton to the Chiefs.
Oh my gosh.
Right at 32.
That's just unfair.
We've heard that Newton might slip because he's not got the best measurables, right? Like, you know, he's not super long.
No, he's light. Real quick, here's my thing with that. Byron Murphy II has been rising up the board. And I love Byron Murphy II. I love both of these guys. But for one guy, it seems like the undersized arguments are made a little bit more often, and it's Newton. And measurables wise, I don't think Murphy was any longer than Newton. I think Newton's still at 32.5-inch arms. So it's like,
it's kind of a weird argument to me to make, but it's like there are a lot of logical fallacies when it comes to the draft, right? And it's just like, if you like a guy more, just say so, right? Like, you don't have to say, oh, well, the measurables will cause him to fall. Like, if you think Byron Murphy's a better player than Johnny Newton, like, okay, like, they're both great players. It's just interesting, especially, I think, with just the way that the board fell. I did kind of keep that in mind with Newton. Is it the consensus on him has been a little odd? Like, everybody loves Newton, but it doesn't really feel like the NFL has kind of matched that. It felt like Byron Murphy overtook him as a DT1 in about January going into the combine. And I don't really know if any of them have outright won it. But I look at, with the way that the board fell in this mock, Newton to the Chiefs just makes so much sense. I think he can play a big end and kick inside as well, kind of like how they use Charles Omenihu and Mike Dana. I think he has the quickness. I mean, he's like the best player available on the board. And I thought about a wide receiver, and I feel like Chiefs fans would actually like physically hurt me if I didn't give them a wide receiver in round one. But they never take wide receivers in round one.
And they sign Marquise Brown too. So
they just signed Hollywood Brown.
Yeah.
And it's like, what, you have a chance to add Johnny Newton to a defensive line with Chris Jones already. Like, just those two alone, you know, every offensive line coach is going to have like stomach ulcers in the game planning, trying to deal with those two on top of George Karlaftis and, you know, Mike Pennell, who you re-signed, Derek Nnadi as well. Like, there's a ton of talent on that defensive line, and it's just such a Chiefs fit the way that it fell. That, like, it's such a, oh yeah, Kansas City landed Johnny Newton. Great. Yeah. All right, man. I hate this. Like if you're a fan of the Chargers, you're sitting there going, come on, man, why couldn't you just take anybody else? But it's such a Chiefs pick. I feel like it really is, of just like, why wouldn't the Chiefs take him?
For sure.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing with Latham to the Ravens, right? I had Latham slipping a little bit, but that's such a Baltimore Ravens pick for JC Latham to fall right to them at 30. Right, he just steps right in. He's your starting right tackle, and it's like, oh well, great. The Baltimore Ravens did it again. Another talented guy fell right to Baltimore. Like, it's just sometimes it's just the way the board falls and the cookie crumbles.
Yeah.
And it really was just too good of a fit for me to pass on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And Newton is still my DT1. Like, I love Murphy for sure, but I think Newton, the flexibility with him is insane. And I think that's kind of what plays into his alignment versatility. Like, you can play him at 5-tech. There were reps where he was stunting from 5-tech out to 7-tech, like looping around tackles and still winning with ankle flexion inside 3 seconds, right? Like, that doesn't happen with a normal defensive tackle. It just doesn't, right? So, you know, and he's a very sound run defender too. You know, like, and he's well leveraged. He's got really good play strength. I think it's really hard to poke holes in his game aside from the non-elite size and length, and even then, like, he's not a size liability. So
and like, if it was an issue, kind of like we were concerned with Kalijah Kancey last year, right, where it's like there are reps where he's in the run game where he's just getting taken to the woodshed. Did it matter as a rookie? No, he played great as a rookie. He was phenomenal. But it did play a factor in his evaluation. Some teams will care about it, other teams won't. So if it showed up as like a liability in his game, I think it would matter more, but it really doesn't to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't see an outright like negative flaw about Newton to the point where I would drop him, but NFL teams are weird, man. Yeah. Happens all the time.
Sometimes they overthink, guys. And hey, you know, we could look back and maybe we're wrong, but you know, looking at the tape, just a really good football player. Like, there's not a lot that I can say negative. Yeah. And I think, you know, getting him alongside Chris Jones, Charles Omenihu, and they have Felix and Udike Uzama, who was a little bit slow starting last year, but the tools are there for sure. I really liked his college tape. So I think there's room for upside there for sure. That just an embarrassment of riches on the defensive line, which is exactly where you want that to be, right? If you can be rich anywhere, be rich on the defensive line. It's going to pay dividends for sure. J.C. Latham was a very interesting fit for both of our mocks, because I had the Giants getting 11-23 from the Patriots, who traded back up for Jaden Daniels. And the Giants got Brian Thomas Jr. at 11, which I really like the vertical threat, right? I'm not sure if Daniel Jones is going to make the most out of that. But hey, you know, if Drew Lock wins in the competition, maybe there's some high variance there. But, you know, at the end of the day, whoever your QB is in 2025, Jalin Hyatt and Brian Thomas Jr., that's a lot of speed, a lot of dynamic ability for sure. And then J.C. Latham is who I had them picking at 23. The Giants did sign Jermaine Illuminor from the Raiders, who I think is probably more of a stopgap competition guy at right tackle. But Evan Neal really regressed last year. So I think J.C. Latham can play guard for you early on if you want to. Like, I think there's some of that flexibility there, projected flexibility. And then, you know, eventually files into right tackle. But I like the Ravens fit a lot too, because, you know, what they do exactly, you know, up front is they impose their will, they outmatch you, and they just prove that they can move you off the line. And I think that's the exact perfect fit for J.C. Latham, especially with Derrick Henry in that backfield now. Like, you're just going to maul guys. You're going to outmuscle them. And it's scary to think about the upside there.
Yeah, and it's such a perfect, like, the way that it fell too. It's just like, oh, of course he lands right with the Baltimore Ravens, right? They do this every year. They just kind of stand pat, wait for the board to fall, and then it's like, oh, the best player available shouldn't have been there. All right, yep, it's Baltimore Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the way they've handled the offensive line. You have to replace 3 of your 5 starters, right? And maybe 4. We'll see with Ronnie Stanley. They reworked his contract. We'll kind of see how that plays out long term. But they've openly said they wanted to get younger and a little bit cheaper on the offensive line. And you look at that, you get J.C. Latham right there in round 1. I mean, I think that's a perfect fit for what you want to do offensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I agree. Another team that I wanted to ask you about, the 49ers, who both had them taking Jordan Morgan. We mentioned that he can move inside to guard if you want him to, but he's got some tackle ability as well. Do you think they're pretty much, it's more likely that they go offensive line there now? Because in free agency, they were very active on the defensive line. They signed, if I remember correctly, Leonard Floyd, Yetur Gross-Matos from Carolina. They traded from Malik Collins from the Texans. And then they also signed, I believe, Jordan Elliott from the Browns. No, like, guy that would preclude me from taking a defensive lineman there, right? But you think about Chris Kosterak and what he can do with defensive talent, coach guys up, and they have a really deep rotation. Now, does that kind of increase the risk, increase the likelihood that they go with an offensive lineman and maybe make a move up for a guy if they like him enough in the 20s range?
Yeah, it's definitely, you look at their biggest needs are, they need an offensive tackle. Mm-hmm. Right? You need a long-term plan behind Trent Williams. Whoever that happens, And you only have Colton McKivitz on a one-year deal. I believe it's just a one-year deal as well. So, like, you have to find your long-term tackles options. And you look at their other needs. I think a nickel corner makes a lot of sense. The pass rush, I feel like you need a defensive lineman. But with the way that, like, the defensive end group fell, there wasn't really a guy that stood out to me at that specific spot that would preclude me from taking somebody else.
Would you consider Darius Robinson there from Missouri? Especially given, I know it's not an exact match to, like, Eric Armstead, right? I think Armstead was a little bit bigger, a little bit more.
I think he does make some sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would pass on an offensive tackle for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a good player. I just, when you look at the needs, and it really feels like they want to attack. Like they were so proactive on the defensive line in free agency so that they could attack the board at offensive line. Darius Robinson does make a lot of sense schematically as a fit. So I wouldn't rule it out entirely if we're looking at the draft. When it comes to their pick, I wouldn't rule it out entirely. But I feel like you have to positively get an offensive tackle here. And the talent and the difference in talent at here versus your next pick, I think, is too stark to pass on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another thing, too. Like, the tackle class after the first round group does fall off a tiny bit.
Yeah.
Like, there's still guys.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to put Patrick Paul in a wide zone, outside zone offense like that? Yeah. I personally wouldn't. You could talk me into Blake Fisher, but again, it's a right tackle. You have to flip back over to left tackle.
Yeah.
I just feel like Jordan Morgan was such an obvious, like, seamless fit. We will see if he'll play tackle if he plays guard. But I think if you're in a run first play action offense like theirs, you can get by with him at tackle early on, especially as he develops. I mean, you have Trent Williams to learn from. Granted, you can't one-to-one replicate Trent Williams in terms of just he'll throw everybody around and do things that some tackles can't. But just in terms of, like, how to approach the game, I don't know if there's a better vet to learn from than Trent Williams right now. And Jordan Morgan, again, like we talked about, you can play him inside if you want to play him at your right guard spot. You can play him there. Or if you just want to have him sit as a left tackle understudy, you can do that as well and have him be your long-term left tackle behind Trent Williams.
For sure. Karan Amagaji from Yale is another one that I would really like in round two, but that dictates that he lasts through the entirety of round two, which I don't know if that's going to happen. But tackle guard versatility, all the tools there to mold. So, but yeah, like you said, I think it definitely, frees you up a little bit to do that. One more team I want to touch on real quick, and also just I can't believe I haven't talked about Xavier Worthy to the Lions at 29, my pick for that. Just imagine that speed, man. Imagine that in Ben Johnson's offense. Like, I know they got Jameson Williams already. Jameson Williams and Xavier Worthy in the same offense. It's fun to think about. But I think the Lions moves, because they signed Marcus Davenport, who's kind of a good depth rotational guy, right? He's not going to preclude you from taking an edge. But they also traded for Carlton Davis, right? They signed I think Amik Robertson from the Raiders as well. So I think they targeted those needs enough where they can go best player available at 29 if they want to. And that could bring in a very exciting combination of picks for them. But I wanted to talk about the Jets at number 10 real quick, because you had them picking Oldu Fashanu. I had them taking Brock Bowers. The Bowers hype has been kind of picking up a little bit. But in my seven rounder this past week, I had them taking Troy Fatanu as well. So, I think they got Tyron Smith, they got Morgan Moses, two veterans, right? Do you think they take a tackle? Do you think it's what's the odds for you between taking a tackle or taking a weapon at that point? Because I think the board does have to fall the right way for a weapon. I think it's more likely that a tackle will be on the board, right? Because you're probably not going to get the big three. So is it going to be Bowers or Brian Thomas Jr., or is it going to be a tackle for you? We've got 30 seconds here. What are the odds for you there? I'm sorry, I put you on the spot. I talk too much.
I really feel like it'll be a tackle. Mm-hmm. It just makes sense to take a tackle earlier on, because you only have Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses, I believe, are just on 1 year deals.
Yeah.
Right. And if one of them goes down, who's your guy behind him? Right. You don't want to be stuck playing revolving door at left tackle again, like you were last year, right? Where you kept trying out different offensive line combinations and they weren't working. Now you have Tyron Smith on a 1 year prove it deal where he can get all these incentives monetarily wise if he plays, but you don't have any assurance that he can play a full year. He hasn't played a full year in several seasons now to this point. And so if you want to keep Aaron Rodgers healthy, you have to fix your left tackle, have that long-term solution. And I think you just take Fashanu there at 10. And if you know what, if he has to play as a rookie, he's a good enough pass protector, he can. And if not, he's learning behind Tyron Smith for a year and he'll be ready to go in year two.
Nice. I love it. Well, hey, with that, that's the end of our mock draft podcast post-free agency. Thank you all for listening. As always, we will be back with more content next week. Check out AJ's 7-round mock at the end of the week at PFN. It'll be a great one, as always. Until next time, Ian Cummings, AJ Schulte, peace out.